This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey, welcome back to Deconstructing the Myth. This is a bonus episode for season 3, and I chat with Maxim Novikov today. We talk about how to incorporate gentleness into our deconstruction journeys, both towards ourselves and others. Well, Maxim, I'm so excited to have you back on the show today. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be back.
Yeah. So for listeners who don't know, I interviewed you in season 1. You were a bonus episode then. You're a bonus episode again. And a lot has changed for you between now and then. But when I first came to Instagram, to the deconstruction space kind of publicly, you were one of the first accounts I followed. And I just found so much wisdom and even grace in your post, which is such an interesting word to bring up. And we'll actually get into that word perhaps a little bit later. But a graceful attitude, at least, towards dealing with some of these really difficult, touchy topics. And you had so much wisdom to share in that episode, which I will also link in the show notes. But then you took a break. You've been off social media for how long? It's been a while.
It's been almost a year, and that was kind of the, it wasn't actually the initial plan. So to go all the way back, whenever I'd finished the episode with you, mm-hmm. and then I would say 2 weeks went by, and I was almost like confronted with the reality that I didn't feel at the time that I had much else to say.
Yeah.
And that was like a really startling, like, wait a minute, like, what is going on? Mm. And I just finished an episode with you. And then about 2 weeks later, I'd come to this realization that I felt that I hadn't much else to say when it comes to the substance that I was trying to get out there. And so I had spoke with my therapist, and I was explaining to them about like where I was at this sort of standstill. Mm-hmm. And I was telling her about my writer's block that I'd been struggling with for about a year at the time. And she had said something to the effects of, well, maybe you don't have writer's block. Maybe you're just bored with what you've have to say. Like, maybe you just like you're bored with what you've been talking about. And I was like, oh, my goodness. And she's like, Mox, you're not going to like to hear this, but you may need to take a little break. And so what had started as just a week, like, I think it was supposed to be just 2 months away from social media, ended up being a full year off social media. And it really solidified the reality that taking a break does not necessarily mean a standstill in the direction you are going. But really just gave me a time to contemplate on the direction I was headed. And also it allowed me to sort of sift through the ideas I'd had for myself and actually look at the things that I knew subconsciously was not fitting in within. Like, I felt like I had outgrown my box. And so it was time for me to actually sit down and look at everything that I sort of had going on in the background of my mind, to really see like, oh, there's a lot in this cup, but there needs to be a little bit more substance going on. And so that really took me down a journey of looking deeper into things I didn't anticipate I would be as fascinated with, such as anti-racism work, social justice work, learning about American history. Like, these are such like not spiritual subjects, but for me, it felt so spiritual because it was in this time that I realized that spirituality can't always just be about the transcendent experience, about the meditation and the and the beautiful visions and the wisdom conversations and all of that. There has to be something that is tangible that your neighbor can reach out for. And so if all you have is pretty words, but nothing else, you're not going to be as helpful in the long run, I don't believe, for my own story.
Yeah, that's so cool to think about. And I think we often feel a disconnect when we try to separate, or when we think those things are needing to be separated. But before we get into this, I want to hop in, but it just occurred to me. So for some of our listeners who have not heard your episode, because we've grown quite a bit since that first season, could you give us the briefest synopsis of your spiritual background? And then let's jump off to where you are today, because there's so many new things I'm really excited to hear about.
Yeah, so growing up, I was on one side, Southern Baptist, First Baptist Church. And then on the other end of my family, I was Pentecostal. And if you're familiar with both of those sorts of doctrines, they're similar, but they're also very, very vastly different in how they go about understanding theology, the relationship with God. Like one is once saved, always saved. The other one believes that, you know, you have a sinful thought and that can potentially keep you from the gates of heaven. And there's also, there's a lot of other things that play a part in that. And being a queer individual, being raised in that very conservative background, I struggled with a lot of, I suffered with depression for most of my childhood from the ages of, I think, like 8 years old to about 17 to 18.
Oh, wow.
And so that was, I was also one of those people that was like one of those ex-gays too. Mm-hmm. So I would be like, oh, I struggled with this, but God has helped me. Like I feel like I've lived many lives at that time. And then I think I was 17 or 18, I was at a church camp and I was sitting in one of their college classes that was for basically giving us information about how college students, once students go to college, they usually leave the church. And it was like my interior knowing knew more than I did. And it told me, like, you're going to be one of those that leave. Even though at the time I thought I was happy within the institution that I was with, that I was in. And I thought I was, you know, being a good little Christian boy and all of those sorts of things. Yeah. But I think that was really, that was the moment that something within me knew something that I hadn't yet caught up to. And it was soon after that I began my deconstruction when I about like 18 or 19 years old. And it's been a long journey, like, to here now.
Yeah. Well, and you talked about, I think briefly in that other episode about, didn't they try to exorcise you? Oh my
God. Yeah.
Can you just briefly touch on that? This is not at all what we planned to talk about, but like, what in the world?
So I was probably at the time like 14 or 15, and I had opened up to my youth leader about, you know, I'm struggling with my, at the time, sexual sin, which would just be things of like, you know, masturbation, pornography, and things like that, having lustful thoughts towards same-sex attraction sort of thing. So I'd opened up to them. And I was then, we went to a church thing and it was on my own, my own drive to get the exorcism because I tried everything else. I had done like the penance. I had done all of the things that good Christians are known to do whenever they struggle with sin. So that's fasting, that's reading the Bible, that's abstinence from anything that is of a temptation, that is going to having your elders lay hands on you. There's all sorts of different things that I'd already done. And we went to this little chapel and I had asked that, like, oh, I feel like, because in that Pentecostal religion, they believe like demons can go into you and things like that. And I thought, oh, I must have like a gay demon within me. And I believed it. And I was so hopeful that this would be like the resolve that I was needing. When in reality, the only thing I needed to be exercised from was the harmful doctrines that said I needed to be exercised from something.
That's wild. Yeah. Oh, man. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that this was actually of your own initiative till now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's as you were talking, it kind of made me think of why I enjoy your presence in this space so much, because you are so nuanced and you understand, because I've had a lot of people say, you know, that the church did this to me. And let's be clear, the church does bad things, right? Other people do bad things to us. But sometimes, I don't know, it's just interesting to hear in your mindset at the time thinking this is the answer and this is going to help, and how it's just such a hard thing. And so that's really interesting. And I do really appreciate how you have approached nuance and have approached topics very carefully and kindly. And so maybe we can use that as our segue into talking about the topic we really wanted to hit today, which is gentleness, which is not a word that I hear very often about deconstruction.
Or a word that comes to mind when we think of deconstructions, because anyone who has gone through this lifelong journey of sort of unraveling our faith beliefs, but also in the same process, it feels like we're unraveling parts of ourselves in the process. It doesn't always feel gentle, and it can feel very chaotic. It can feel very disheartening. There's a lot of loss and grief that goes into this, this practice of deconstruction, faith deconstruction. And so, gentleness is not a word that often comes to mind, but it's some, but it's a word that I found myself clinging to, because if I don't, I'm afraid that I can become the very source of harm that once harmed me. And so it's about sort of reevaluating, but also in different ways, I am still operating from the old software that I was raised up in. And so just as their framework is to, feel defensive or to react out of fear because something is, I too have those moments, even as I've deconstructed, I'm just on the other end of the, on the other side of the line. Yeah. And so there's parts that I have to remind myself, like, I can't react, I have to respond. But I also, in gentleness, when I do react instead of respond, I give myself grace. It's a gentle process. Yeah. And it's not one that will happen overnight, but it is always the goal. I hope to be the example of the Christ that I wish I had when I was growing up. Oh, wow. And that really reads as being gentle.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Yeah. Isn't it funny how so often as people, I've noticed this institutionally, not so much, well, in churches, but I've noticed this in regards to schooling, in part because I know some people that are looking at Christian schools for their kids right now. So it's been kind of in the forefront of my mind. But it's like the more committed sometimes institutions seem to be on paper to Christ and to the Christian message, the more rigid and less gentle they become. There's these weird rules. I feel weird, like things you have to do to be admitted. And it's odd to me. It's almost like as we try and show our passion to this cause, our zeal for this cause, we
lose sight of everything.
It's so weird. Yeah, and I've done that. And then on an individual level, we do that, when we're in the Christian camp, and it's just so interesting and bizarre. So I love that you wanted to talk about gentleness. That was not what I expected you to want to talk about when you came on, but I think that's such a needed topic to discuss.
Yeah, I think that oftentimes when it comes to deconstruction, because it is such a, it's really, I don't know other word, but it's a very whole process. There's so many aspects that are, there are good moments, there are very strenuous moments, there are moments that just feel like you want to pull your hair out. Because there's so many dynamics happening, it feels, just from a personal level, but also in a relational level, that it just feels like there's no, I have to cling to gentleness, because if I don't, I will just become like mean.
Yeah.
Because it's easy when you see such harm being done and you see so many oppressive ideas coming into the mainstream that are masquerading as something wrapped in crosses when it is anything but. It's infuriating and it's frustrating. And if a lot of people who deconstruct, they still love Jesus. And so they're like, this isn't Jesus. This isn't the Christ that I came to know. And so why are we stripping people's rights? Why are we harming people? Why are we gatekeeping heaven? Like, what is that about? And who gave us the torch to be able to do so?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of reasons in which someone would feel anything but gentle.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that because there's many days that I don't feel gentle and there is no grace I feel left in my body. Yeah. But then again, those are the moments that I have to connect back home to myself.
Yeah.
And thankfully I have like a spiritual practice. I have a meditation, different things that I can do when I feel like I'm out of sorts and I can connect back home. And that's sort of where I feel I hear that still small voice.
Yeah. Well, maybe that would be a good place to start then, because as you were talking, I was thinking maybe it would be good if we sort of explore this idea of gentleness, but at different levels. So for the individual deconstructing, so you could kind of give us your story on that and how you've incorporated gentleness practically in your life. And then maybe as we are part of the deconstruction community, and then especially incorporating gentleness to our critics, I think I would love your thoughts on that. But first, yeah, tell us maybe some practical examples of gentleness, how you have done that for yourself as you've allowed yourself to explore spirituality.
Yeah. So when I began this deconstruction journey, I sort of felt like a bull in a china shop. There was not a lot of gentleness in me because I was pissed as hell. I was frustrated. I was disillusioned. And I was resentful of the experiences that I was subjected to. And so in that, it caused a lot of strife within my relationships, in the sense that it affected my relationship with my mother, who is still very conservative in her ideas. Thankfully, she is as accepting as she can be about my sexual orientation. And that's a process that we are working through. And I think that's a good place to start when we talk about introducing gentleness, is that I can't force someone to love me the way that I need to be loved. I can't force someone to see the world in the way that I see the world. In talking about my mother and our relationship, I really had to learn gentleness just through that, because instinctually, it's easy to perceive boundaries as building walls to confine you from anything you perceive as being harmful. And so in my healing journey, I realized that is not necessarily what boundaries are. Boundaries are making your statements clear, in the sense that you say, you know, I need to be shown this for us to be able to have a relationship. I need to see an attempt in loving me the way that I need to be loved. And that's also about through teaching. And that's very strange, because we think when it comes to being like having a mother-son relationship or mother-child relationship, that it should be like assumed. But again, as I've evolved, I'm operating from a different place of needs. And so a way that I've introduced gentleness is boundaries, in which I am clear about what my needs are and the expectations I hold, but I also provide reasonable expectations.
Yeah.
And I think she's done that in ways that I never initially expected her to be able to do, considering if you'd listen to our first episode, there was a lot of strife in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of harm done to me in that relationship. And so for her to be able to ask me, you know, How are you and your boyfriend? And things like that. It shows me that she is making an attempt to love me the best way she can. And I accept that. And so now the way that I introduced gentleness in that scenario was by being patient with her.
Yeah.
And realizing that just as much of as this is an adjustment for me as, you know, coming out of the closet and trying to explore my own sexuality in an open and free way, and also deconstructing my faith and all of these different little evolutions in my life, I have to also kind of reintroduce myself to her and be patient with her as she gets to know this liberated child that she had never met previously.
Wow. Yeah. That's such a good point. It's almost like a new person. And you kind of talked about that in our last episode, how she was like, you're going so fast. Mm-hmm. Like, who is this? Who is this?
And the thing is that there's going to be many people who may be like, well, they're the ones who caused me harm. So why should I be patient with them? And guess what? That is 100% a valid feeling to have. And you can walk that road. I don't judge people who have a different experience or a different choice in how they choose to deal with these experiences. From my own experience, I had to see, how does being distant with her feel in my body? Mm. How does being cold and removed feel in my body? And I knew that I wanted to keep a relationship with her because she was in a weird, maybe it's a weird, like toxic way, but she was the one consistent thing that I'd had. And also coming from a position of having been adopted by her and been sort of in some way, you know, saved from a very oppressive place, even worse than America, which is Russia. There is that sort of like when you have that adoption aspect to a relationship, it adds like a whole nother layer of just feelings and emotions and how we relate to one another. And so I knew that it wasn't a relationship that I intended to get rid of, but I was willing to get rid of if there weren't going to be changes made. I had to be clear about what those changes need to be. And that was not done through telling her, if you don't shape up, da-da. It was never like that. It was about showing up vulnerably.
Yeah.
And it was about saying, you know, when you say, how is your friend, instead of how is your boyfriend, it hurts my feelings. When you say you miss how I used to be, that feels very invalidating because who I used to be suicidal, depressed, and holding a lot of feelings of being unloved. And so when you make those statements, it's saying you don't like me when I'm happy. You don't like it when I am operating from a place of being liberated. And so showing up vulnerably and saying those sorts of things, although there hasn't been, you know, drastic changes, I've seen changes and attempts that feel like little winks, like, I see you, I'm listening. And what more can you ask for?
Yeah, that's really, that's that nuanced, slow paced work that I so appreciate from you. And like you said, for some people that might not be the route depending on the circumstances, but I do think there are so many that I hear that are craving that connection, right? And they just don't know what to do. They're like, but it's time for me to stand up for myself. And it's like, do I have to lose these people? Not always.
A lot of the conversations I had with my mother were very tough. They didn't always feel nice, but also that is just relationship. I think sometimes you're going to have really gentle conversations and sometimes you're going to have tough conversation. It's depending on what your needs are for the moment, what you're feeling in the moment.
Yeah.
And whenever you do, you know, for instance, lash out, or whenever you do say things that you would maybe regret, that's another part in which grace shows up or gentleness can show up, just for yourself to say, you know, you had every right to feel what you were feeling and you reacted from that wounded place, and that's okay. And that I tell myself that all the time. If I actually committed harm in the process, I don't justify the harm either.
Yeah.
I, for instance, if I had said something that was really just mean and uncalled for, I would go to, for instance, my mother and say, you know, Mom, I was really out of line. I had reacted, and I'm sorry for having said that because that was not part of the conversation to begin with. And so it's a part of accountability, but also not justifying the harm you've done or excusing it away. And also there's points in which I don't feel as though I need to explain where I was coming from, because at the end of the day, I committed harm. And when people have harmed me, I don't really need that much of an explanation. I just want an apology.
That's so good and humble, to be honest, because I'm just thinking with my kids, even when I'm like, I'm sorry I raised my voice, but, and you know, they always say like, where there's, when you say, but does it count? And I really am intrigued, so intrigued with this idea of you tying boundaries to gentleness. So gentleness is not a word I would tie often to deconstruction, but let me tell you, boundaries is not a word I normally would tie to gentleness. And I think that is profound, because we think of boundaries, I think a lot of us think of boundaries as kind of this rigid, kind of like hard thing, when in reality, I think I heard once, boundaries are less about who I keep out and more about how I'm going to keep someone in, like how I'm going to keep us both in the best possible relationship where we can thrive, instead of harming each other. And so it is a gentle approach, but up front, it is such difficult work to get there.
It is, because you really, because I mean, unless you have a lot of experience with psychology and understanding boundaries, it's kind of a lot of stabbing in the dark. You're just kind of figuring it out. When I began my attempts at having boundaries, I'd realized that in many ways I had sort of walled myself in and secluded myself from relationships, because I thought boundaries was protecting me from anything that I perceived as being harmful. And when in reality, as I've sort of challenged with it, I realized that it's less about them and how I show up. And so if there is perceived harm, I have to know where I stand in my integrity, and I have to know when to say no. I have to know where, when I feel overstimulated in a conversation, when to exit. And I also have to know when to say, you will not speak that onto my life. You will not speak that over me. And so boundaries is less about cutting people out of your life and creating these really rigid, unrealistic expectations. And it's saying, I'm going to show up, but I'm going to need you to show up a little more gently. And we're going to work through this. But if I don't see mutual attempt at this gentleness, and because again, it's all about respect. It's all about, if I'm showing up vulnerably, I need you to do a little bit more. And kind of having those tough conversations. And also, boundaries, though, can be, you know, I don't want to dismiss this either. Boundaries are also, if someone cannot show up the way that you need them to, and they are causing harm and they are being complicit in it, you have every right to say enough and to disconnect entirely. There's nothing wrong in that. But I think oftentimes when we're deconstructing, it's easy to be like, oh, you don't share this same theological beliefs, you don't hold the same doctrine beliefs, I think your entire framework for living is harmful and complicit to harm, so you're out. And that's just not the way I choose to go about relationships. Now, that also doesn't mean I'm going to have people in my life who are, you know, explicitly homophobic or homophobic in general, because that's just not the sort of, it's not life-giving.
Yeah. Well, and it's also tricky because so many of us in deconstruction, you know, I think that there's this mindset, okay, moving forward, here are the people, here's the kind of person I'm going to let get close, right? That's almost a boundary for ourselves. And yet we have entered deconstruction with this whole group of meaningful people to us who maybe don't fit the vision for the people we want close in the future. So that's where the boundaries are so important, especially these gentle boundaries, or these boundaries that move us towards gentleness, because it's like, you know, on the one hand, we used to be the people. Some of us used to be the people we wouldn't want close to us now. So what do we do? So I love that take of trying to find a way to kind of almost collaborate on that mutual respect on and on how to be each other in the relationship, but in a way that's not harmful. I love that.
Yeah. And also it's a, this boundaries thing is a very embodied experience because you're having to really go within yourself and learn about yourself and ask, like, what are my fundamental needs that I didn't have growing up or earlier in my life? And how can I meet those needs for myself first? So when I am in environments in which they don't feel comfortable, I can show up for myself at the very least.
Yeah.
And then when we can reacquaint ourselves to ourselves, we can then show up in other spaces comfortably. And so I think that's a really important thing to add as well, is that boundaries is just as much about learning about ourselves and getting reacquainted with ourselves as it is about how we deal in relationships with others.
Oh, that's such a good point. Yes. Okay. So let's move on then to the idea of extending gentleness maybe to the broader deconstruction community, because I don't know if you've experienced this. I imagine you have, because I remember when I was first following you, you definitely had a following and did some different voices on your page. But it's been so interesting because when you say you're in deconstruction, or when you're a kind of a public deconstruction voice, you get people who are investigating, who are questioning, and yet that sometimes that's where the similarities end. Like, you know, you get people who are like, I'm still basically where I started. I'm just questioning a couple things. I'm still really committed to everything. And then you get the people that are like, nope, religion needs to die. Like this, everything needs to go. And so it's a very interesting mix of often very passionate people in one space. And I just wondered if you had any thoughts on having gentleness where so many voices live and are experiencing a similar process, but in some ways are so different.
I think it's about understanding that everyone's going to have a different path in how they go about this really strenuous process that is deconstruction. And so it's about meeting people where they're at. And so there are people that don't necessarily like my take or my gentle perspective, because I guess they think that it's being passive in the face of harm, which anyone who listens to the entirety of what I'm saying, that is not at all my message. But sometimes when you have been so hurt, gentleness doesn't feel like an option. It's burn it all down. And I get it. I was there. I have so much compassion for that perspective. And I don't think, by the way, it's not like I feel like I'm as though this enlightened individual who knows better. It's just that I've walked a different, I have a different path.
Yeah.
And they have a different path, and I respect their path, and I respect their holy rage and their anger. And I get it. It's, and so it's less about knowing better. I think it's just about doing what is right for yourself. And I'm choosing to walk a different path than them. But when I see them making the choices they make, I feel quite indifferent to it. It's like, oh, that's their path. Because guess what? Their rage is going to be just as helpful for someone who has been so timid and stuck in within themselves, who've never been able to express their rage. They're going to look at that and they're going to be like, oh, they read what I feel. And then someone is going to hear maybe my more gentle approach, and they're like, wow, I need more gentleness. And so it's about respecting different paths and not holding one above the other, and just taking it for what it is. And so in the way that I do, how I introduced gentleness into the way that I deconstruct and within my own community, it's just taking a moment to take a step back, even if they're hurling insults at me, and say, oh, this is their path. And for me, that's enough. I don't need to do anything more. Like, I'm good.
Yeah. Oh, that's so beautifully put. That's so beautifully put. And I feel like so freeing, because so many of us as evangelicals in particular, were like, well, no, we need to tell them they're wrong. Like, we need to tell them that they need to be gentle. Like, I'm going to aggressively tell you to be gentle. Yeah. Like, that would have been more of the approach back in the day.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, I think there's been times in which I was criticizing the church for doing this and that, but then I was looking at myself and being like, well, you're not really doing it either. You're just talking a ton about it. And so I was like, well, I need to actually start practicing this. And I need to start, because, you know, it's often in the deconstruction spaces, we're often talking about, you know, how the church is harmful against women and different bodies of culture and people from different worldviews. And we want to criticize them for how they're going about it. But then I think that's where we have to ask ourselves, is like, well, how am I actually helping these different bodies of culture? How am I actually helping other than just persecuting others who aren't doing what I feel they should be doing?
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Like, if your only action of help is to criticize, like, yeah, like it's not a, it's not a, like, it's not a, I don't know what the word is.
It's a great starting point because you're aware of it. Like, you're aware of the harm, and that's a great place to start. But at some point you have to put feet to the pavement and actually start participating in making the change instead of criticizing those who are preventing the change.
Oh, that's so good. Oh my goodness. And that's really interesting because for some people, I feel like maybe for you too, once they start doing that, it seems like they're not always as interested, at least for a time, in speaking a ton about it because they're busy doing the work.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's so interesting. And yeah, I just find that really fascinating.
But also when it comes to, you know, criticizing institutions that are harmful, like there is a point in which you need to not be doing the work and you just need to be learning. You need to be actively listening to people of color who've experienced harm within the white church. You need to start listening to the queer individuals who felt harmed by the church. You need to just be listening, and you need to, and you also need to be participating in the outrage. I get it. But at some point,
yeah,
there has to be more. And that's, so I want to stress that, yes, there is moments for outrage, but at some point, you actually have to be a part of the change, or you're just being a nuisance and you're preventing change.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, and I think it really speaks to maybe the idea that deconstruction kind of ebbs and flows and has different seasons, different segments, you know, and we may find ourselves, like you said, for some of us who have suppressed anger or who have been taught anger is bad, it is important for us to actually experience that anger and actually experience the messiness, the conflict it causes, but also the expression it gives. But then maybe at a different season in our deconstruction, the anger is no longer serving. It's harming us and others.
And I've been there. I remember, I think I texted you about this a few months ago, but I realized that I think rage is a lot like a hotel. Whenever your house is under construction, it's a nice place to stay. It's a place that you can get away from everything and you can be angry and you can be pissed off and whatever. But a hotel is no home either. And so I don't suggest making rage your home, but it is a good place to stay when you've held in so much stuff and you are pissed as hell and for good reason. Feel the rage. I felt rage for a few years and I still have moments of anger and frustration and rage, but I don't want to make my home there. I don't want to set up my tent.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. That's so good. Okay. Well, for our final category that I had proposed, the critics, these are the people who I think if you were going to have rage might be the ones that it would come perhaps most naturally, especially those who are still, who aren't even deconstructing, who maybe think deconstruction is wrong, who maybe think, you know, exploring different aspects of spirituality are satanic or whatever, you know, these people can be some of the toughest, I think, to extend gentleness to. And so do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I live in a majority conservative community filled with people of an opposing worldview. And so I am inundated with all of their ideas and thoughts and fallacies. And whenever I'm confronted with it, I would say that is being in this community is the greatest, would probably be the most impactful part of my spiritual practice, mm-hmm. because I actually have to practice these really whimsical ideas about gentleness, right? Like I actually have to yeah. practice it.
Yeah.
But what it's taught me is that just as many assumptions as they have about me, I have just as many about them, because they continue to surprise me in the ways that they've extended grace, in the ways that they have been nuanced in their perspective, in the ways that they have said kind things to me. And so, or in which, like, I remember I was at a Black Lives Matter rally a few years ago after the tragic passing of George Floyd. And one of my coworkers, who I'd always kind of like looked at as being a very conservative individual with very like problematic opinions, they were at the Black Lives Matter rally and they were participating on what I would consider the right side of history. Mm-hmm. And it really made me self-reflect and be like, what is it? And so I talked to him later. And I'd asked him, I'm like, I honestly was surprised to see you there. And he had opened up about his own experiences and how he's been also on a journey of sort of wrestling with his beliefs and his ideas. And I think wow. that's something we forget in the deconstruction community, is that just as capable as we are of change, so are those that of an opposing worldview. They are just as capable. And so that's where grace comes in, about offering the benefit of the doubt, of believing in their capacity to evolve and change, just as we have. Oh. And so when I am confronted with people with opposing worldviews, I can only hope that they will see the harm of their ways and gently be nudged into a gentler worldview, or a kinder, compassionate worldview. Mm. And then there's the scenarios where I'm confronted with those who have nothing but visceral and unkind remarks to make to me. And I no longer feel as though I need to defend myself. I no longer feel as though I need to, like when I'm called, you know, my heretic, or when I'm called, you know, like I'm working for the devil, and all these like sentiments that are similar to that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't bother me, because I can look at the fruits of my work. And I know that the work that I'm doing, I know that the kindness that I hope to put out into the world is having a much more positive impact than the things in which they're spewing that I would argue is creating death in the world.
Hmm.
Not in just a physical level, but also in an emotional, metaphorical way.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. And yeah, I think that ability to let things just be, sometimes that's not what we're called to do. But no. I do think sometimes that is like, you said you no longer feel the need to defend yourself. And that is not because you're being a doormat. It's because you realize they can't touch the things that matter, you know, concerning
yeah, exactly.
You.
I think it's about having a sense of who I am, and also being able to self-reflect and see, like, how do I feel in this body? Can I stand in alignment with who I want to be? And am I doing that? And is the ways that I am participating in the world creating love and light and encouraging and inspiring? Or is it creating harmful ideas in people? Is it causing people to feel bad about themselves?
Mm.
And so when I can look at just the fruits of my ways, I'm like, I'm doing pretty good. So if you're going to call me all of these things, happily, I'll claim it, because I feel pretty good where I'm at. But the way that they're reacting so viscerally, I can't imagine they have a rested nervous system.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so true.
Because I didn't have a rested nervous system when I was operating in that world.
Yeah.
I was an anxious wreck.
Yeah. Well, when you think people around you are headed to hell, burning fiery hell, then you don't think you're causing them destruction. You think, I got to give you a kick in the pants to save you. And so I think that compassion is so important that you're bringing up.
I was just talking to someone yesterday about that very thing, about like, if I have to look, a way to look at it is, and this is a very compassionate, and I understand that a lot of people will not be able to come to this place because of the harm that they've experienced, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at people who have this very harmful way of operating in the world, and they feel justified because of it, because they feel as though they are helping people get to heaven, so it's worth it. In a way, I feel as though, like, I can understand, I can respect it. Like, at least they are, you know, walking the walk of what they believe. Mm-hmm. And if they believe they're saving people from hell, which is no, if you know, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, okay, I get it. But again, that doesn't excuse the harm. That doesn't excuse away or justify. But it's a part in which you're able to see them as being human and saying, oh, they're scared for me. Oh, they're scared for those that they want to go to heaven. And they're fearful that they're not living up to that, living up to being able to access that. And so it's about seeing, like, they fear just as much as we fear. They are scared just as much as we feel scared. They all of those things. And so trying to offer a little bit of gentleness, a little bit of compassion towards the people who, although they're committing harm, you know, like,
yeah,
they think they're doing the right thing. But again, it doesn't excuse it away at the end of the day. And we have to work tirelessly to reverse the script and to not allow that to be a normalized thing in our culture, because we know the death that it can ensue, the harm that it can ensue.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to observe something, say, oh, this isn't good. But also being able to say, oh, but I get it, but I'm still not going to let you spew that hatred towards that woman who's walking into a Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. I'm still not going to allow you to speak out racial slurs. I'm still not going to allow you to do that in my presence.
Yeah.
And I'm also going to work tirelessly to participate in being a part of the change when it comes to how I choose to vote, how I choose to participate in different mediums of activism.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things, you know, that nuanced space of having both, and, you know, of understanding where someone's coming from and also finding the way to hold people accountable, finding ways to hold ourselves accountable, finding ways to move forward, not simply looking at what's wrong. That's a tricky spot that I often find myself being confused about, even in my own life, about how to find that balance. And I just love that you bring voice to that in the work you do. And so I want to hear what your place is going to be as you come back to social media, because I am so curious, Maxim, I'm so curious. Like, I want to know what is coming down the pipeline since you're coming back online.
I don't know if it's anything like grandiose, but I would like to bring a little bit more of a more compassionate approach to deconstruction, as we've talked about here, but also introducing elements of things that I'm passionate about that I feel can go hand in hand with deconstruction, which is concern for the whole. And so just as we are kind of unraveling our spiritual worldview and our spiritual takes, I would also like, and I wish this was the case, but I don't see a lot of it. I wish that the deconstruction also put an emphasis on collective care and social justice, because how are we going to talk about being of be, like, for instance, progressive Christians talking about being progressive Christians and things like that. But there's not a lot of emphasis on conversations around anti-racism work. There's not a lot of conversations around, there's not a lot of people of color in the deconstruction community. There's not a lot of conversations about social justice and in ways in which we can participate to bring about collective change. And these are things like, just as much as the transcendent ideas are important and the things about spiritual health are important, I think our collective health is important as well. My time away from social media was really spent informing myself about things that you don't imagine as being very spiritual topics, like about, like, the, for instance, the prison industrial complex, the racial caste system in America, the policies that are going against trans lives. But also, if we are going by, for instance, the Christian message, where in which Jesus says, what you do for the least of these, you do for me. Mm-hmm. And we're able to adopt this unified way of seeing the world, we would see that the harm that is happening to my Black and brown brothers and sisters and my trans siblings, like, that is so important. I need to be just as concerned about that as I am about talking about spiritual deconstruction and things of that sort, and just focusing solely on scriptural ideas, but not actually bringing it into the material.
Oh, yeah.
And so my page on Instagram, I hope to be sort of this blend of faith deconstruction, spiritual contemplation, interfaith dialogue, but also an emphasis on social justice and inviting in dialogue around anti-racism work, and also embodied activism, being conscious of what is happening within the body as we are participating in activism and being concerned about the self as well as the other. Because I think often, just like in the spiritual community, there has to be the blend between focusing on the self and the collective. So self-care and, yeah. So those are sort of just the things I want to introduce that I feel as though there's not enough. And it's, for me, it's interesting why there isn't a lot of conversation, because if a lot of the conversations are about what Jesus would have done and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. and why the church isn't living up to that, but there's not a lot of tangible or practical participation or mediums in which we're creating to make, you know, heaven here on earth, then what are we doing?
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's interesting. My husband sometimes tells me, he says, he tells people that work with him, he says, don't bring me a problem unless you have a solution, which doesn't always work, because sometimes you have to acknowledge the problem first. However, you know, deconstruction has been a thing for a while, like not a hugely long while, but I do think at some point, like you said, we've kind of got to put some feet, some skin on the bone, so to speak, of these ideas, even though we don't know. And I think that's one of the things. Some of us are like, I don't know. There's so much I don't know now. And so then we are like, it can lead to inaction almost. I don't know.
100%.
So
100%.
Yeah.
And I think that's where, you can, like, for instance, if you have a workplace that has, you know, a few people that, you know, are of a progressive mindset, actually reaching out to them and saying, hey, I want to participate in my community. What are things that I can do? Also, there's Facebook groups. I'm sure if you live near a city or if you are in a city, there is something being done in the community. There's LGBTQIA centers. I would say, though, for those who are really interested in participating, in a lot of cities, the Episcopal Church, the United Church of Christ, if you are still of a religious and you still participate in the church, they're great churches that have a great, they are very active when it comes to progressive issues and participating, not with the intention to sell Jesus, but just to be a part of positive change. And so visit your local Episcopalian church or whichever, if you are of a religious mindset.
Yeah.
If not, if you are not, look on Facebook groups, find like you just type in progressive dot 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 your city, or you know, and you will find people doing the work. And also look on event pages in local, like for instance, maybe there's a rally for issues that has to do with book bans, and people are speaking at town halls about why they feel as though books should not be banned. Go sit in, go watch, go listen, go to witness and learn about the environment and see like what are the conversations that are happening around this subject.
Yeah.
And so there's ways to be political without always being, you know, with a flag on, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because everything we do is political.
Before we finish up, is there anything else you want to touch on? Otherwise, we'll do where people can find you.
No, I just want to say thank you to you for being such a good friend as I stepped away from social media and checking in on me every once in a while. And we had so many insightful conversations in our texts.
We did. And I was like, why aren't these episodes? Because you'd send me audios and I was like, Magza, we need to just like put this in an episode.
I just wanted to say thank you because I really appreciated your support and your choice to stay connected. And I also made an effort, I hope you noticed, to also reach out and check in on you as well.
I did.
And
thank
so,
you.
I just wanted to say that it really meant a lot. And I also am so proud of all the work that you've put into deconstructing the myth. And seeing the work that you put into it, because I know that it is a labor of love. Yeah. And so, yeah, I hope you are able to internalize that and just be able to self-reflect and see like all the work you're doing is making a difference and you're doing beautiful work.
Oh my gosh, you're gonna make me cry. Thank you. Thank you so much, actually. That means a lot. That means a lot. Because we've talked about that, I think a couple times I was like, I don't know. It's hard. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, where can people find you as you're coming back?
So right now you can find me on moxum.novikov on Instagram. And also I think you can find me on YouTube at Moxum Novikov. And that is MakCumNov. IKOV. I'm sure it'll be linked somewhere.
Yes. I'll put in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, yeah, that's where you can find me for right now. I would like to see some things come about, but I'm not pushing it.
Yeah.
I'm just enjoying the process of coming back gently.
Yes.
And mindfully. And so, yeah, kind of deconstructing from a place of conscious awareness. Place of gentleness.
I love that. We'll send them your way, Maxim. Thank you so much for doing this today.
Of course, I'm happy to talk with you. You're just amazing.
If this episode was meaningful to you, please consider supporting the show at patreon.com/deconstructingthemyth so that episodes like today's keep coming.